This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Power Lunch with Laura Bennett.
Hello, great to be back with you for another episode. And right at the front, I will admit that chatting with today's guest is totally about inspiring my own sense of wanderlust and dreams of embarking on a year-long adventure around the world. But I think you will too and find the story of Christopher Schacht really inspiring. If you've ever been burdened by life's responsibilities or you just want to see more than the everyday that you've experienced so far, reading his book Around the World on $50 might just be the trigger to seeing you chasing some of those travelling dreams. I picked up his book a couple of months ago. He tags it with this line of how I left with nothing and returned a rich man, because he was 19 when he went on this four-year-long journey, about to go into a computer science degree that he had a scholarship for and the full-time career that would inevitably follow that. Instead of doing that, he broke with the routine, put $50 in his back pocket, no credit cards, no plans, didn't travel on an aeroplane, and wanted to see how far his smile and drive could get him. So he hitchhiked across the Atlantic, yes, with no aeroplanes, none of that. He journeyed through the jungles of South America, found a lot of friends, tried a lot of great foods, met his wife, but more than that, he really started to understand himself a little bit better. He got to know God, and he found out what it means to really be truly rich.
Initially, when I had the idea, let's say, I wanted to explore the different cultures, smell the different smells out there. And, you know, video can only show you so much, but in order to experience the whole stuff, the real stuff, you need to be in there. And I wanted just that. But then I prepared myself about 1 year for starting, and it was during my final year at school. So I was also very busy with a lot of school things, but then on the weekends everything was planned, and then I had a lot of other ambitions too. So actually my schedule was already packed entirely for the next 4 years, for the next 4 weeks ahead, and a lot of times even further. And I just, when I started, I just wanted to be free. I didn't want to have any schedule anymore. I said I want to basically live from one day to another and see what's there. So this sort of feeling freedom was quite important.
Yeah. So what was the appeal to you about getting to be free and not having to live to any kind of order or diary?
Yeah, so we are living in a very demanding society. So we are always measuring ourselves to very high standards. And there are a lot of burnouts also, even at younger ages nowadays. I probably could have been such a case, but I was doing really a lot. And now I said, well, I don't have so many responsibilities right now that I'm finishing school. I don't have a house yet. I don't have family. Well, at least not children.
Yep.
My mother and my father, they were.
They count.
Probably also. Yeah, they count. They still count. And my siblings too. And they would have been happy if I stayed home. But I didn't need to care for them, so less responsibility on that side. So I said, if there's one time in my life where I can do this, then it's now. And it turned out to be one of the best decisions of my life. So I never regretted it. And even though it was a very long time, and definitely there were also quite a lot of difficulties in between, I would do it just again, yeah.
Was the goal to visit as many countries as possible, or was the goal to be away for 4 years, or did it just kind of balloon out to that so that you had enough time to see everything that you wanted to?
So the goal was to travel the world but take as much time as I need. So I didn't have a particular number of countries that I wanted to visit. It turned out to be 45, and I stayed about a month in every country on average. But that wasn't really my initial goal. I just had a few landmarks on the, let's say, on my route that I wanted to see. Mm. And then once I started, I just kicked them off, basically, and then floated from one place to another. But I had this idea of going around the world, and then it turned out that for one reason, the plane tickets are expensive, and then on the second, I really appreciated this feeling of not going into a plane, because you sort of get a sense of how big the world is and how much time it takes you're filling the gaps that you would have with a plane. Mm. Like in a plane, you get on board and then you drink your tomato juice, and 7 hours later you get off the plane and you're at an entirely different place. It smells different. The heat, the location, the food, the people. And you think, wow, how did I get here? And you don't really have this when you're traveling overland.
Yeah.
You fill in all the gaps. And for that reason, I wanted to... And after I found out that I could cross the oceans via sailing boats, I worked on sailing yachts across 5 of the 7 big oceans of the world.
Wow.
And after I figured out I could do that, I said, okay, I might just as well do the entire trip like this. And then if you're sailing and hitchhiking overland, it just takes some time.
And I imagine, I mean, you would have obviously seen so many different cultures and been in some pretty sticky situations that we do actually read about in the book. When you think on the last couple of years, what are the moments and the stories, the people that really stick out to you?
Wow. So there are a lot of remarkable moments and way more remarkable people still that I met during the trip, and a lot of people who've been really inspiring. And so I will just pick one sort of people group and one moment. Mm. So one moment that was really, really astonishing was while I was sailing across the Pacific Ocean on one of the Pacific islands called Vanuatu. Well, the island group is called Vanuatu. The island is called Tana. Mm. There's an active volcano. And it's definitely worth it. It's a remote island. A lot of people still living very, let's say, culturally simple. They don't have a lot of infrastructure there. They built their houses out of natural materials like bamboo and the like. And we were anchoring in one of the bays of that island and then going on a trip to that volcano and meeting the locals there and having these local ceremonies with them, the kava ceremonies, and then you get to the volcano, and we were climbing up the mountain at nighttime, and once we got to the rim, it just was purely breathtaking. The whole mountain was shaking and then blowing up lava pieces that were flying over our head and shooting into the sky, and like these 100 fiery sparks there in this black night sky. And when you see such a spectacular, marvelous event that nature can provide, it's you really think, wow, this is so powerful. What am I doing here? What is my place in life? And what am I actually living for? Because this could take my life in just a moment.
It gives you such perspective. And there's a couple of things that you realize about doing a trip like that is that, well, one of the things is that, as you say, you're living moment to moment, and each day you realize you don't totally have control over. How do you get to that place where you do live so unplanned or freely in a way? Because I feel like the minute you begin a trip like this, it might take a little while to feel settled with not knowing what's coming next.
It does, definitely. So in German, we have a phrase, a saying called every beginning is hard. And so every beginning definitely is hard, and that beginning was too. Right at the start, I was still very confused about where I would sleep because I couldn't afford the hostels or hotels. So I usually stayed outside with my tent. But then again, you want to stay at the place where you can't get robbed or you most likely don't get robbed. And then I didn't know where to get the food from, water, or I wasn't used to the long waiting hours you need when you go hitchhiking. And actually, a lot of days I would go quite hungry and without a lot of food and a lot of sleep. So the beginning definitely was hard.
What did you learn about yourself then through the journey?
Right at the beginning, I started to figure out that because it's so hard, there are really so many things that I cannot do out of my own strength. Let's say the wrong presumption, right, when I started that if I just work hard and do my best, then I can do it. But then it turned out that there are really a lot of circumstances that you get into that you cannot get out by your own strength. And that was at my trip the first time when I also really started praying. I wasn't very much Christian at that time. But then experiencing really the powers of prayer, I would say, that changed and passed the whole entire way to come. And then later on, about 1 year into my trip, I really had this strong experience over a couple of months that turned me from sort of agnostic tendering to Christianity to a Christian who says, wow, this is so amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't know that there is such a great life waiting for me. With this going along, sort of felt like my ways already passed, and I'm just walking along, let's say, with a great hand leading me the way and showing me the way and preparing the way already. And whenever I would get to a door that is sort of unopened, that was great, really having about 3 years to learn to walk by faith.
And because you're so at the edge, you just have to trust. And I noticed that you do mention that in the book, where you really started to discover a deeper relationship with God than just the practice and the going to church sort of tradition that in some ways you were raised in. In coming home, how have you kept that kind of continuous connection with God and trust like that, even though there's obviously a lot more structure and elements that are probably very known and stable to your home life now?
Yeah, so on the one side, I definitely agree it's safer. But right when I got home, I hitchhiked to my university after spending about 2 weeks with my family with two big traveling bags. And then I arrived there and my fellow students were already looking at me with big eyes, because that was quite unusual that people would go with to be traveling bags, hitchhiking to university. And so then I picked up my theology studies. Before I wasn't into computer science, I had a scholarship in computer science as well. But now that I had all these life-changing experiences on my travel, when I got home, I just wanted to do this full-time. And so I picked this up, and half a year later, I proposed to my that time girlfriend, who is now my wife.
Congratulations.
And that was pretty, thank you very much. And I met her during my travel. So that was also really a crazy experience and a lot of, I would say, pretty miraculous coincidences that led to that. So a lot of steps of faith, proposing to my girlfriend that quick, I would say. And doing this whole church plan thing, and then taking a study that I would also need to cover myself, and finishing this book. And when I started writing it, and even finishing writing it, there were just a handful of people who read it, and you put so much work into it. It's literally months of work that you put into it, and then at the end you still don't know, will even anybody like it or read it?
Yeah.
Or will it just go under some shelves or in the cellar and some storage room? But yeah, it turned out to become one of the 10 best-selling books 2018 here in Germany last year.
It's cool.
That is crazy, yeah.
Yeah, people are curious about stories, and I think that's what makes your book really good, is that you do get to read a lot of stories. And as you mentioned, you visited 45 different countries, a remarkable mix of culture. What was it about all of those different people and those places, though, that you think connects us all together and actually makes us all quite similar?
If you go around the world, you start to realize really how much human we are. Even in the jungle, out in the villages, there are neighbors talking bad about their other neighbors. Anything that feels so familiar. And on the same side, people have this longing for hope in their life, the longing for relationship, for being loved. And wherever you go, if that's in the jungle in South America or in the Buddhist monastery in Asia, everywhere people are searching for this higher meaning, or at least something that they can put their hopes onto. And I would say, even then, in this demanding structures that we have from Western society, also peace. And a lot of people struggle to find that. And I think Christianity has the best message in the world, and we got this all for free for the people. So I think there's so much more room and so much more that Christianity has to offer that people really aren't aware of. And so when I see all these similar desires, but then again, also the striving from everyone just to have a good life, basically, when you meet all the strangers on the way, you would say, oh, probably the Pakistani or the people in Iran, or and I traveled through these areas, probably they are more dangerous or less friendly than the people of Thailand and of China or whatever. But really, everywhere you go, people want to live a good life, and they would also appreciate if you have a good life. So very few of the people would want you something bad. It's just a very vast minority whatever consider doing something bad out of, let's say, no motive at all. So you meet so many happy people, so much hospitality towards you. That's pretty encouraging. And then at the same time, when you realize how much similar ground you have and how great this ground is being addressed by Christianity, then that also gives me hope for the future, let's say.
Yeah, you suddenly realize that connection, and it's great that you are encouraged to know that kindness still exists in the world in such in a lot of really profound ways. For people that read your book, what do you hope that it does to people and or leaves with them?
Two things, I would say. The first, definitely to pursue what they are being made for. And a lot of us, we are afraid to step out and do the things we actually want to do. And I think there's really some calling that every one of us has, but often we are afraid to follow this because people tell us, no, it's not impossible. You cannot, it's not possible. You cannot do this. It's impossible. And where do you get the money from? How are you going to start? And I don't know, where are you going to stay? Or you don't really have the degree to do this. You don't have the connections to do it or whatever. So there are a lot of people seeing way too many obstacles to really pursue what they want to do in life. So I would, on the one side, want to encourage people to do that, because you start to realize having passed so many seemingly impossible things that really, if it's God's will, there are so many things that you will make possible. And it's not out of your strength, of course, but if you trust and you put yourself into his hands, then that's the best place to be. Then the second thing is also, let's say, connecting the world a little bit more. I think the traveling is one of the best ways to get sort of a feeling of we as as humanity.
Yeah.
Because there are so many prejudices across other countries or towards other countries and other people. And if you've never been there, you think, well, probably every second person is a terrorist in Pakistan or whatever. Until we meet a lot of Pakistani, and there they are so welcoming, warm-hearted people making such great food.
Yep.
And then you want to go there again and again. And but stirring up a desire for people to get to know people from other cultures, from other countries, bringing the world together, and making people curious about that. And at the same time, people who are not able to travel because for whatever reason, enabling them at least to travel with me in the book around the world, and then they can
and to see the ways that they can
once they are ready.
Yeah, to see the ways that they can travel. Okay, so last question then, Christopher. Talking about the Pakistanis and their food made me think of it. What was the favorite dish that you ate while you traveled?
Okay, so every country has got really, really good food. I'm sort of a food lover, I would say. And really, that was the best thing about this whole trip, definitely, was meeting all these different people and the relationships that I got during that, and person for almost the relationship to God that I experienced in this trip, but then right second came the food.
Yeah.
And when I was in English Guyana, there they have this cassava plant.
Mm-hmm.
Probably you know cassava, it's quite common in the tropics. And there are two types of cassava. There's the sweet cassava, and then there's the bitter cassava.
Mm.
And the bitter cassava is poisonous. But the Indian people there, the Native Americans, South Americans, they take this bitter cassava leaves and they cook them for 3 days on the fire. And this 3 days of cooking neutralizes the poison. And then afterwards, you can make a sauce with it. And they do that. And then they put this lava meat, which is sort of a small animal that somehow has a little bit similarities to a pig in there, and eating that with that sauce, that was just, wah, an explosion in your mouth. Wow, that was crazy.
Mm.
And probably equally great was ramen in Fukuoka, the very southwest of Japan. And I actually included that story into the book because that was also so breathtaking and so funny as well. It's a very bizarre ramen store. From the outside, it looked pretty industrial and just had a blue bucket to symbolize that it was open. So already strange from the experience. And then I was there with two Japanese people, and they let us, the restaurant let us wait for 20 to 30 minutes before we were allowed to get in. And then we got in and we saw it was half empty. We could have got in there straight away, but somehow they wanted you to wait to really appreciate when you're going to get there. So it started off strange. But then once we got this ramen soup, you're not allowed to eat the noodle first, but you have to try the soup first.
Mm.
And then I tried the soup, and that was like, wow, biting into the most delicious and juicy pig I've ever eaten.
You're making us all just jealous.
Yeah, and I thought, how did they get so much taste in there? I was literally shot into the high seven for one moment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What an adventure. What a journey. Thank you so much for chatting with us about it. And everybody does need to go and read Around the World on $50. Christopher, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
And that is it for this week's Power Lunch. Thank you for listening. Would love for you to subscribe, rate it, share it with your friends, and let me know what you think. Until next time, see you later.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.